Arrival. Queen. Queen Station. Doors to open on right.
Sit back, relax, and open your mind. Together, we'll travel throughout the city, the country, and across our planet in the pursuit of sonic phenomena that will challenge the limits of our perception, defining a new world for us to inhabit. You have crossed over to the night shift.
Listening to the Night Shift, CJRU 1280 AM. Luca here, very excited about this interview. A group who, for me, as soon as I heard them, I really fell in love. I was instantly thrown back in time to discovering groups like Inhabitants and Fond of Tigers for the first time, as well as, you know, legends, Jagged Jazzist, Toe, Tortoise, recent Canadian legends, Fetnat. These guys would be equally as home on a Thrill Jockey as they would a Drip Audio. They're waving the flag for weirdo, proggy, experimental rock in this country. And I'm just so happy that they exist and they're doing their thing. And I'm chatting right now with one of the main concoctors of magic in this group. Some call him the Shadow Man. Some folks call him Brent O'Toole. Toolsy is in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. That's one of the nicest introductions I've ever received about any music I'm involved with. So thank you so much.
I'm here. That's what I'm here for. I'm very jazzed to chat. But just to clarify, you are the Shadow Man of Ramshi Video fame. Is that correct?
I can't comment on that.
Oh boy. Holy Hannah.
You're pulling it out like a Nardwuar interview right now.
But this
going
is
going right into it.
I try to do that. That's what, you know, community radio is here for that. But that's whether you are or whether you are not, I love the costume of that character. And it reminds me of the character from the recent miniseries of The Watchmen, which came out. We were talking somewhat off air about a group that we kind of bonded over a little bit over Instagram. And you were just telling me that you were diving into them recently. The album is Francis the Mute. The band is the Mars Volta. And that for me, like, disgustingly important group for me for high school Luca. But I feel like I still haven't found the time or the place to dive back into them. Like, how often do you find yourself on a Volta rabbit hole?
So it's really weird that you've kind of brought this up now. To give a little bit of context, I think, like, I always point to the Mars Volta as the reason that my band exists as it does. The drummer Ian, who plays with us, him and I started the group when we were in high school, and it pretty much started because he was the only person I met who knew and liked the Mars Volta. A lot of people knew them and absolutely hated them at my school for some reason. But I remember the first time I listened to them, and it was Delaus in the Comatorium that I listened to.
Oh, that's the one.
Yeah, it totally shifted everything in my head and was like, oh, I can make a band like this? I didn't even think about that. So they've been a driving force for my creativity and any band that I've been involved with for a long time. But yeah, very recently, I've just like dove right back in and gotten probably more into them recently than I've ever been into them. And I think it's because I'm missing my band like crazy right now.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, they're such a good live band. I've been looking at a lot of their live videos, but just the energy that they have and the intensity and how much fun it sounds like when they're playing together has just made me miss my group a lot. So I've just been listening to Volta pretty much every day because of that.
So during this whole, new universe, how often have you guys been able to get together? Or have you not seen the folks in a while?
It's a huge bummer because one of the last time we all saw each other was a show that we played back in March. And that was a release show for the band Your Granddad. And it was one of the better shows I think we've ever played in terms of the people that showed up and the energy of the night and how well received it was. So it was at least good that it was that, but a huge bummer that everything immediately shut down right after. And we didn't see each other again until July.
Darn.
The middle of July. And we haven't actually fully met up as a band since. Although I have recently been meeting up with Ian on drums and we've just been doing one-on-one practices, but even that's only happened 3 times.
That stinks. So, yeah.
Yeah. 4 meetups since the start of this. And 3 of those are just the drummer and I.
Well, you know what? I wish obviously we all wish just this could get back to normal so folks can get back to creating and doing their thing. Mm. I do have a question about Ian, unreal drummer. Love him. Love listening to him play. Super soulful player.
Oh, man.
Would you be comfortable betting on him to win a weed smoking contest? Because not to be mean, he looks like he can crush the ganj.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. He would, and he would win. Like, he would destroy whoever was going up against him. I don't care who you pick. He'd be like, I'm there. We're doing it, and I'm winning.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine someone that could pull it off better than him. And he'd be very proud of it.
Big shout outs to Ian Hines. Shout out to the rest of the group. Steve cook, the cooker. You met Steve way back in the Wires days.
Yes.
Shout outs to the great Danielle Fernandez on the sax. And yeah, of course, Anematist, loving this group, repping Guelph, repping Brampton. New album, Inverted, out right now. The remixed release is out as well. It's all happening on Glue Gun. And going through the back catalog, going back to the Seeds days, and then going through that just kind of journey, it brings me too much joy that the transition, that the adventure that this band went on, went from kind of more accessible, very folky, kind of local natives-esque kind of jams to obviously way more experimental, instrumental, when and often not. You see bands kind of go through the opposite.
I think I'm just on a bit of an opposite journey. Like I think the stereotype is that, like you said, and not only stereotype, because we see it happen over and over again, where bands start out as this very bizarre project or a weird or, you know, something that's not quite on the mainstream. And when they get noticed and they get popular and they age, they could, you know, the music becomes normalized. It becomes more pop influenced. But also I think the stereotype is that you listen to, like you kind of hone in on your musical tastes when you're, you know, in your late teens and early 20s, that's going to be the music you listen to for a long time. And people usually listen to, you know, more relaxed music. I'm going the opposite way. Like I just got into heavy music in the past 3 or 4 years. And I think it was the band Swans that did that. And I probably just jumped into my first mosh pit at about 25 years old. I'm doing this in the wrong order, I think.
I think it's a totally right order, dude.
It's working out. I'm enjoying it. But as far as the change itself, I don't really know what happened. I guess the best thing I could really describe is how much the University of Guelph and the teachers and professors I had there really changed my mentality on music. I kind of got into that school because I didn't get accepted anywhere else. And I was going for some of the more difficult music schools to get into, like Humber or UFT, where there's such a caliber of musician going into it and the spots are very competitive, and I didn't get into those. But the Guelph program let me in, and I just lucked upon the fact that that school embraces experimental music and the avant-garde and free improvisation. At least when I was there and the professors that were there, that was like their primary focus and their goal, and they used free improvisation as a basis of what their music education was and how they taught people and how they allowed people to teach them improvisation and communication. So just my entire schooling ended up, you know, pushing me further out into the fringe and showing me more of the possibility of what you could do musically. And the two biggest names I'd probably mention from that is Joe Cerbera, who led the creative music ensemble at the University of Guelph, and my guitar professor, Ken Aldecroft, who
rest in peace and power.
I know, what a huge loss. It was really messed me up when he passed away, but he was such a huge influence. So much of his ideology about music and of guitar and the bands that he listened to just went as much into my playing as possible. And there's a bunch of other guitar players that were around my same year we've all kind of taken different elements of Ken and his teachings into our own music. Shout out to Dan Lochran from Baby Labor. And unreal. Ian Bain, who has the project Soft Side. I'm actually wearing his shirt right now.
Very nice.
And they're both incredible guitar players and musicians and composers. And we all studied there at the same time. So I think that, you know, it probably started at that school, even though inspirations like the Mars Volta have always been there. I think the University of Guelph just pushed me to make whatever I wanted to make.
Well, what bands and artists, I'm curious, were you guys kind of jazzing out over?
Fetnot was one of them that you mentioned.
Oh, nice. So yeah.
Dan Lochran told me about that band, and I went to a show having listened to nothing, and that's probably the quickest I went from not knowing anything about a band to them being my favorite band in the world. Like, it took 10 minutes of the first two songs they played, so that was certainly something we were obsessing over. I think the group Day, Month, Year, if you're familiar with them.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, we were nerding out real hard over their music as well. And they were playing a lot as, absolutely free. I think they had just started that group at the time. And so they were playing in Guelph. So that was one. Who else?
Yeah, you're naming just a collection of Canadian favorites of mine.
I'd love to keep it Canadian. There's so much amazing music from our country, and it bums me out that there's such a negligence to it, you know? Like, people just aren't even aware of some of the most amazing bands.
And I want to dive into that. I do want to go a step further and examine the ideas and the conception behind the remix album, which, you know, you're talking before how, you know, you really over the last few years got heavily into heavy music. I'm just curious, yeah, because Inverted Remix, you know, it's exploring a lot of electronic music possibilities, a lot of dance music possibilities. I'd love to learn when you guys saw that, hey, okay, let's kind of chase this.
Well, I think another huge band for me has always been Radiohead. They're a band that's like always stuck behind me, and I was always hugely influenced by their music. So it's probably a huge reason why I got into electronic music was how much they were playing around with it. I think I was a huge fan of theirs when, you know, Tom York was running the website and was posting weekly the music he was listening to. And he would come up with a list of songs, and most of it was electronic. So that kind of led me that way. And of course, most of the time, I think at least around the time of King of Limbs, Radiohead was getting electronic artists to remix their music. So that's probably where I stole the idea from unconsciously. You know, I always thought that you could then put out an album and get somebody or a bunch of different artists to completely reimagine your music. So I think we were trying to think about that because so much of electronic music is in 4/4. So much of dance music is in 4/4. So much of the culture of remixes is taking songs and making them explicitly 4/4. So since we play with such weird time signatures and are trying to constantly push the boundaries, what would happen if we gave our music to a bunch of people that might be interested in putting it in 4/4, and how would they imagine it? Sinead from Animal Party, who did a remix, literally sent me a message and said, haha, I put your music in 4/4. and that was, they remixed our song Train Pelicans, which I think has some of weirder time signature changes.
That's my favorite song
in
the album. I love that song. Sweet.
I think it's my favorite too. It's the one I think came out like the most what I wanted each song to be. That one lived up to its own self, I guess.
Inverted was conceptualized and recorded the most outside of the legendary Basement Studios locale.
Yes. So it's of anything we've recorded, the only thing that was not recorded in like the home studio that's at my parents' place. Yeah.
That must have been kind of heavy in a way.
It was, but another thing that we also pushed for was doing as much of that album as we could off the floor. So I think it felt natural to be in a different space when we did that, because when we play live as a band, we're so used to being either on stage or in a temporary rehearsal hall. We don't really have a space that we go to and exist where we play our music and actually as a band, that's the same place over and over again. Even when we rehearse, we're at like the weekly or daily rental rooms at Rehearsal Factory.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt natural to be in a new space when we're playing live as a band, because we're used to doing that. And the fact that it was still, for the most part, recorded in a house rather than a studio, that also felt at home.
That's insane. You guys, how much of that did you do off the floor?
All of it's off the floor except for the saxophone and a few of the synths.
Oh my God.
I think we overdubbed some like guitar solos. The only stuff we overdubbed is what we like felt like we couldn't do off the floor. Part of not doing it in a studio meant that there'd be a lot of bleed from the saxophone if we did it. So we decided to overdub that. If we wanted to do a lot of weird effects on the guitar or use a synthesizer with a specific patch, we overdub that. But the drums and the bass and most of the guitar are just us playing.
You know, this album explores so much noisy realms, so much kind of areas for improvisation. And it's so cinematic too. Like compared to Face Club, do you find that it was more of an atmospheric kind of dreamy release sound wise?
I don't know. I guess I might've thought of it the other way around.
Interesting.
I don't know. So Face Club has like a lot more production to it because we did it, you know, like track over track. It's the same old way that I've always tried to record music. That was done in the studio you mentioned, Basement Studios. So that to me has a lot more like atmosphere and texture or overdub synths and guitar and things I tried to make from soundscapes. Whereas Inverted, the music to me is like so much more stressful. And so I guess a lot more difficult to play. And because we were playing it off the floor, I mean, I guess we were trying to capture more of like an in-your-face live energy. So it's funny that you don't feel that way.
Yeah, it's complete opposite.
Sweet. I mean, that's cool because like I don't think you can ever fully control, you know, what you want the intention to be and what how people receive it.
Yeah, like
so that's
like,
funny that it's the complete opposite. But that's kind of cool. That's interesting.
When you mentioned that you guys at least recorded drums, bass, and guitar mostly, or if not all off the floor, I was like, oh my God, like just that release, there's just so much space in so many sections. I mean, it sounds so immaculate. So I'm not wearing a hat, but if I was, I'd tip my hat because that's a really far out discovery. I do want to do a quick little throwback, just, you know, talking about how this album does have a very cinematic feel, I find. I'd love to learn about your experiences working on the film Zara.
Okay, wait, what?
The short film Zara.
Yeah, I know. How? Okay, now you're actually nard-waring it. What the heck? How do you know about that?
This Zara exists in the ether within the Brent O'Toole annals of history.
Oh, that's so strange.
That's a chapter.
Like, so to give anybody listening an idea of what, like how much of a deep dive this is, I barely remember making this, period. I barely remember being involved in this film. I think it was probably like the first film thing I was asked to do, and I haven't really done much since, but it was like a project I was probably... Do you know the year? I don't even know the year that was from.
It was definitely in the Guelph days.
Yeah. I think that'd be like 2012 or... Oh, I don't even know. What's really weird is that recently I was going back through like a lot of my old hard drives. I've hit the limit of the space on my computer now that I've started doing some video editing work. My hard drives have filled up so fast. So I'm going through and trying to delete things, and I stumbled upon the recordings from this and listen back to them, and I guess I kind of cringed about it a little bit, to be honest. I was asked to make, so this film was kind of a short film by a film student. I feel really bad. I don't even remember the director's name.
Sarah Heathfield.
Okay, so yeah, like this is how much
She's gonna be listening, and she's gonna be pissed.
Possibly. I'm so sorry, Sarah. No, but it was a short film she was doing for school. I barely remember the plot, but I know it was a lot of focus around like religious identity and somebody not fitting in with, you know, what the school life and secular life expected of them and what their religion expected of them. So I was asked to compose a lot of music that sounded like Middle Eastern or Indian, which is, I didn't know what I was doing. I was in a group at the time called Snake and Crane, which had a lot of Middle Eastern influence in the music, but that mostly came from our guitar player. So yeah, that was just, I guess, a film project we did at the time. I did the score for it. It's probably quite embarrassing to look back on it.
Thank you.
snake and crane questions, but you know, you mentioned kind of Middle Eastern, Indian kind of textures within the music. Mm-hmm. I do find that on the saxophone, Danielle's playing on Inverted really has some amazing kind of culture-based traditional sounds floating in throughout her sax. Is that like intentional, or is it just kind of her natural kind of playing?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty natural. She's classically trained and then was continuing like classical music studies at Guelph. And then because, you know, there it's a really small program at Guelph. So if you're a musician in the program and you're good at all on your instrument, you're going to get asked by as many other people to play or collaborate or perform on people's recitals. So at a certain point, Danielle was getting asked a lot to play on with like jazz quartets and jazz recitals and local groups. A lot of that influence kind of bled in then, but most of it I think is just classical training and then influence from a lot of other Toronto musicians like sax player Karen Ng.
Legend.
Yeah. Oh my God. Legendary. And just, you know, a lot of other like noise sax, a lot of the culture that has existed after John Zorn, and a lot of free jazz movements.
Now I do want to touch on a group that you and Danielle both played in within Guelph, the massive monstrous ensemble Manatee, mm-hmm. 11 piece, kind of Afro beat, inspired ensemble. Could you ever see, and you know, we were talking about Do Make Say Think, mm-hmm. we were talking about Mars Volta in terms of Manatee-esque sized ensembles. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine at some point Animatist growing maybe a little larger depending on if a new arrangement, maybe a new album called for it?
Possibly. I've always been a multi-instrumentalist myself, and so whenever I've done home recordings, I've always thought about adding, you know, as many layers as possible, and then it would certainly require more than just four people to play a lot of the arrangements I would have done. But I don't know, I like it as a tight four piece. I guess it could happen. I've always wanted to have like a percussion player, somebody that does auxiliary percussion on our music. But other than that, I've never thought about it personally. I don't think I'm opposed to it, but it's not at all in my radar at all right now.
If you ever needed someone to wear like kind of various furs on stage and mm-hmm. to just bite into blood capsules and spin them into the air, mm-hmm. I would happily volunteer.
Okay.
Just mark me down if it ever comes up.
All right, sick. You want to know what? Now it will. You've put it out into the universe, into the ether. It will now manifest itself.
I love it.
Yeah. So when that comes, I know exactly where to reach you.
You're listening to The Night Shift, CGRU 1280 AM. Luca here, chatting with Brent O'Toole of Animatist. Inverted is out right now. Inverted Remixed is right now. Is out right now. I want to talk Glue Gun, but before I get into that, you mentioned Snake and Crane before. Mm-hmm. This is a crazy band. And, you know, this whole interview, we just have been pumping the tires of so many legendary Canadian groups. Mm-hmm. Snake and Crane, Dave Croft and Rambir Gundu of mm-hmm. a legendary Canadian group, Vulcan Dub Squad. So Snake and Crane playing kind of Middle Eastern, Indian influenced punk rock, kind of proggy, experimental in its own way. This is pretty weird. Did you guys once play a show called Bramladesh versus Mississauglabad?
Yeah, I think it was like a comedy show.
It was you guys and then a comedy show.
Yeah, I think we did play that. I 100% remember that. I didn't know it was called that.
Apparently that's what it was. And I from what
Bramladesh versus Mississauglabad.
It was like a collection of like South Asian Canadian comedians.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that band always got the weirdest gigs. Like I thought, so if I, can I give a little backstory? Is that okay?
1000%, 1000%.
Okay. So the Vulcan Dub Squad is a huge band for me when I was growing up. My cousin Shane, who I was in with The Wires. He kind of introduced me to the Brampton scene, and the Vulcan Dub Squad were a huge band at the time. It was amazing. Like, they were literally my favorite band. I loved everything about them. They were one of those bands that made me want to start my own band. And then as I got older, I literally got to play with these two guys. It was like I got to join one of my favorite bands. And we were making way weirder music and much stranger stuff. So it was even a little more fulfilling. But I always assumed, because of how many cool shows that I saw them at, that we would just get cool shows. And I think every single Snake and Crane show is like the weirdest show I've ever played, in the weirdest venue, in the weirdest place. Why is my band here? I have no idea who called us, who arranged this. And I think, yeah, every single show we played was weird, except for like one North by Northeast show. So that comedy show is just like a long list of the weirdest shows I've ever played. But I would say that it was wrong to not mention them earlier, because I think the music education that they gave me by being in that band is probably just as important as the education I was given at Guelph.
It was pretty incredible just watching or looking at some of the press photos that you guys did. And they're these older dudes. And then you look like you're 8 years old.
Yeah, like on top of them looking fully aged and you know, like in their mid-30s. I guess I was 20 or 21 at the time, but I look like I was 8 years old. I had like the Justin Bieber
haircut. Like, this kid, like, he, great player, don't get me wrong, but is he a child prodigy? Or... I was astounded. But yeah, shout outs to David and Rambier. Absolutely. Vulcan Dub Squad, legendary OG Brampton band. But it doesn't stop there with that group, because you also were part of a performance conducted and composed by the great Jason Dole as part of Delicate Triangles. So you got the whole Vulcan Dub Squad experience.
Yes. And you want to know what? They that was hooked up by Rambier or David.
Okay.
One of them mentioned it to him. He was just looking. So a musician had dropped out for this experimental art project he was doing, and he was looking for a bassist to fill this spot, and he called me up and I jumped in. I guess another one of the weirdest gigs I've ever played, because it was in the Gladstone Hotel and different sets of musicians were in different rooms from each other. So you walked through the gallery section of the Gladstone and you could like experience this performance and choose what level of anything you wanted to hear. It was very bizarre.
Toronto, Luca here chatting with Brent O'Toole, aka Richard Holiday.
Yes.
And so we're talking Glue Gun. We got a shout out, Big Jesse, Alarcon, shout outs to the Ned Flangers. I need to, let's get into this, because Glue Gun is slowly and surely becoming one of my favorite Canadian record labels.
Oh, thank you very much.
How did this all come to be?
Really, this is Jesse's inception, pretty much. I think I've done a lot of the work recently on it, because so much of his focus is on doing live shows, running sound, helping bands record. That's kind of been hindered by the pandemic. But we were associated with Three Nines tapes. That was Dylan, who was in our band, Ned Flangers. He had a tape label at the time, and I think Jesse just wanted to start one as well. Like, we felt like we knew enough different musicians and artists that we could try our own tape label. And I remember he looked at me one day, he picked me up in a van, and the hardest thing for me is always what to name something. So he looked at me and he's like, we're starting a label. Like, no, like, do you want to start a label? He's like, we're starting a label. I was like, okay, what's it called though? And he's like, Glue Gun Records. I was like, oh yeah, it's a really good name. It's, I think, like, the only time that somebody has told me the name of something that I was going to be involved with, and I was like, 100%, that's the name, there it is, let's go, it's perfect. So it was really his idea to start it, and it was something we continued, and for a while it was mostly about booking shows and helping artists. We had a few releases out, but now pushing up to the pandemic, we were able to acquire a lot more artists. The Animatus record we put out was the first record we put out on vinyl. We just put out our 13th release the other day. So yeah, things have been like really developing and picking up.
I got to find out some more information about this character, Richard Holiday, and this whole series of videos that you've been throwing down. Like, this has been some seriously saucy stuff.
Absolutely.
And what would be the cocktail for Inverted?
Room temperature gin, and that's it.
Oh. Oh my goodness. That would destroy me.
Yeah, no ice, no nothing to cut it with. No, I don't know if we had an actual cocktail for this record. I would have to actually think about that. Danielle's really good at making cocktails.
Okay.
So she could probably put something together.
When it comes to just thinking about the musical mandate of this record label and just maybe the community that, you know, it is kind of fostering, do you think that silence in Guelph has had a big effect on it?
I don't know if it's had a big effect on the label directly. But I think silence has always been like, it was started up by Ben Grossman, and it was a venue and a kind of collective almost, or I guess like an ideology that started in Guelph. And it was right around the time that I was in my third or fourth year, just about to graduate. It was this huge breeding ground for weird music. Ben kind of kept the doors open and any event was allowed to happen there, with a specific focus on fostering any of the weirdest music made by young students and young performers in Guelph. So I think it's certainly a huge influence on and been like a fostering environment for the music. Animatus has played a ton of shows there, but I don't know if it feeds directly into the community on the label. I think the community that we're reaching to, although there's a lot from Guelph, it's also pushing into the Toronto market now. Or they're bands that I haven't been to Silence in quite a bit of time. So I think it was bands that I met outside of that venue. They probably performed there, but I'm not sure.
Shout outs to the folks, in Silence, shout outs to the folks in Guelph, just doing their thing. One of my favorite music cities in this country.
Yeah.
And shout outs again to Jesse, who's doing the Lord's work. Ned Flangers, or Flangers or Flangers?
Flangers. So yeah. It'd be like the pedal, like Flangers.
Oh, bitch.
Yeah.
So you played drums in that group.
Yeah.
You played percussion in Manatee, and you also did a little percussion maneuvers with Levant, kind of like a side project from Snake and Crane.
Yeah, not very much, but a little bit, yeah.
I think like some djembe, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you're very kind of connected in this as a percussionist, as a drummer, and we're talking about Joe Cerbara right at the start of the show. You've studied under him. You and Danielle have done some performances with him as a collaborator, as a teacher. Can we spread the gospel of Joe Cerbara?
I mean, like, and isn't he also one of the most amazing people to talk to?
Sweet,
like,
dude.
I feel like he always knows exactly what to say. Oh, yeah. And always in as few words as possible. Like, brevity is the soul of wit is very much, you know, who he is. And yeah, anything he says always seems so honest, so heartfelt, so wise and so caring and appreciative to however you approach him. He's like, I don't know, he's incredible. He's one of probably the most amazing musicians I think I've ever had the pleasure of performing with, of just seeing live, actually. He's phenomenal.
Big shout outs to Noisy Joe, who's holding it down. I want to touch on a character because, you know, before getting into guitar, you're a clarinet guy. I want to reference another clarinet guy who I respect his work. However, I'm worried that he has killed someone before.
Okay.
I'm talking about Nicholas Cooper of the Sentinel's Marvelous Kaleidoscope. He terrifies me. He's a great radio you? Guy.
Yeah, why does he terrify
he
you?
He just sounds like he eats skin.
Okay.
He is a very way.
No, he's pure sweetheart. Definitely does not eat skin. I mean, like maybe, but I just get I get a really good feeling that he's not much, does not consume human flesh.
No, you know what? I love the show. Great musician too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He does have that classic Canadian community radio delivery.
Yeah. But
I think the fact that his show exists and he's still super jacked, and shows like him that are doing their thing is amazing. And I got a lot of love for CFRU. So I just wanted to shout out those folks and all the work that Nicholas is doing, because he's a big fan of yours.
Oh, a huge fan and a huge supporter as well. Like, he's given Animatus, but also like all of Glue Gun Records. And most musicians I know, like, has really given us a home on CFRU. If I send him any sort of music, you know, it doesn't matter how weird it is. He's always down to support it, always down to play it on the radio, you know, like add it to the radio's library. So an immense support both to myself personally, but also the music scene as a whole, especially coming out of Guelph.
Big shout outs to Guelph. Big shout outs to Nicholas Cooper. O'Toole, aka Johnny Twilight of Animatist, in the house. The album.
Not that name.
That is that's a tough one to.
How do you know all this?
This all exists in the universe. It's all
right. Yeah, I know that, but how do you tap into it? I feel like you have to really do some work to like get this information.
That's what I do. I dig really hard. Google's very big. Touching back to Nick Cooper, you know, I hope he's not eating anyone right now. I hope he is just doing his thing. But you guys did a really interesting show about video game music and soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know your video games. Would you suggest any solid NES games and also NES soundtracks to folks out there?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people know this character, but they might not know the game series they're from is NES. From everybody will know him from Super Smash Brothers.
So good.
I'm obviously going to bring up Earthbound.
Amazing.
Which is like the mother series. I think that's one of my favorite video game soundtracks, because a lot of the things that are being done on just a simple like Super Nintendo 16-bit, that their basic sound chip, and there's audio sampling, there's weird processing, there's like some of the most creative music I've heard. You can tell that somebody that really cared a lot and was really experimenting a lot just found the most like exciting ways to work within such huge limitations.
I've never been a big RPG guy, but I fell head over heels into that game.
It's very unique. It's very different, right? Like, it has its own personality, I think.
But the soundtrack itself, it can get pretty downright unsettling at times.
100%. From some of the prettiest, nicest, like everything's going to be fine music. You know, like if you just listen to the Onet theme in your hometown in the beginning, it's like, oh yeah, this is such upbeat music. And then, yeah, like some of the creepiest creepiest stuff you've ever heard.
Pure Nicholas Cooper jams. I'm really ragging this.
Eating people inside the Heritage Theater. There's an NES or a Super NES that is just playing the Earthbound soundtrack. That's what's happening.
Nick Cooper, if you're out there listening, I'm just playing. It's just a lot of community radio love. I got a lot of love for you guys.
We love you so much, Nick.
So yeah, 1000%. Earthbound is unbelievable. Touching on classic venues, classic shows, you guys played an interesting kind of secret venue in Montreal, The Bog.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest venues we've ever played. And probably the one that's violated the fire code the most as well.
Oh boy.
it's a hush hush not real venue.
Yeah.
And it's in Old Montreal. Speaking of lugging gear on stairs, it's two flights of stairs up, down a tight hallway, around a corner, and then three flights of stairs down.
What?
Yeah, because it's pretty much, so it's in Old Montreal, and it's like a side door. It's barely marked that that's the proper place. It's got the number on the door, and you walk up and you walk past like some apartment units, and then there's like a stairwell in the back to the basement, and it's this like this separate concrete basement that's like a dungeon. There's no light that gets down there. And as you walk down this stairwell, like it's the lighting changes and there's styrofoam faces on the wall from like mannequins and all these weird fern, like fake fern plants that start happening. So it feels like you're stepping in to a portal in another world or something.
That's amazing.
And yeah, then there's this tiny little venue space. And funny enough, it's like, it's mostly people speaking English down there. Like it was interesting being in Montreal, and it was a very like,
Old Montreal too.
Yeah. In Old Montreal, like people are, if I walk into, you know, McDonald's or something, they're looking at me weird because I'm not speaking French. And you go down here and it's all Anglophones.
That's so funny. You almost went through a different dimension or something.
Yeah. Like it feels like I just went to a house show in Toronto or something. I don't know.
It's like, Jerry, really, are you afraid of the dark?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
You are listening to The Night Shift, CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, chatting with Toolsy, Breno Tool of the great animatist. I think I've pronounced it at least seven different times throughout the show. Inverted is out right now. Take it in. Listen to it a ton. Listen to Inverted Remixed. Buy it all. Buy the entire Glue Gun discography.
I have too many vinyls in my house. Please help me get rid of them.
Yes, crush them. Consume them. Love them. Make love to them. Just do what you got to do. Just be safe.
Once it's in your house, that's your choice.
Yes. Last two questions, very basic questions. If you were to describe the music of the group, if you were to conceptualize it as a meal, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think it would be something at least a little spicy. You know what? I'm just going to go with whatever the instinctual response was. Like a really nice bowl of pho. Of soup.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I'm just going with that because I think that's my favorite food in the world. So I'd hope that my band would have something to do with my favorite food. But yeah, something where it's it's a lot to take in, and it's a very like filling meal. And it touches on a lot of different flavors. A
lot of layers.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. But it also feels like nice nurturing soup. Like a good medicine. Like I'd at least want our music to come across. Some of my favorite bands and live performances, even though it might be really intense to listen to their music, or I might get destroyed in a mosh pit, you walk out of there feeling like you just took some medicine or like you were nourished. So I'd like to think the same thing about our band. And a bowl of pho is certainly like, it feels like medicine.
For more information on the band, for more information on Glue Gun, where can folks find out more? And who do you want to shout out? Who deserves a love out there?
So yeah, if you want to find out anything about, I mean, the Bandcamp pages is probably the best, or any of our Facebook or Instagram pages. The Bandcamp for Animatist is animatist.bandcamp.com. I have to spell it cause it's a dumb band name. For Glue Gun Records, it's much easier. It's just gluegunrecords.bandcamp.com. That's where we're putting up all the latest music. So you can pick up any of the cassettes we put out. You can buy the vinyl there. And you can also listen to the music. I absolutely, actually, while we're on it, huge shout out to Bandcamp. It's one of the best services out there.
Love it. My favorite.
And in terms of shout outs, I'd like to actually give a huge shout out. I know this still sounds like self promotion and maybe it is, but, we on Glue Gun Records, we just released, a few friends from Guelph, Teddy's Atlas. They just put out their debut EP, Laugh, Cry, Die. And it's like really good skate punk from the like early 90s. And they self-produced it and we just put it out. It's on cassette. You can hear it on our Bandcamp at Glue Gun Records. And yeah, it's just six really tight tracks. It's probably the poppiest thing we've put out. But Trevor Cook plays bass on it and he's got a sick gnarly bass tone. He also studied with Ken Aldecross, so that influence is also there in their music, even though it's skate punk.
I thought you were going to see his thick, gnarly mustache.
No, I think he's clean shaven.
Oh, okay.
Thick, gnarly bass, though.
Thank you, sir. Dude, thank you so much for chatting.
Are we officially done now?
We are officially gonzo.
Dude, this was so sick. Like, I had no idea. I, like, really appreciate I had no idea what you were going to ask, and the fact that you went as in-depth as you did, that was sick, dude. That was awesome.
Dude, pleasure, and yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, no worries.